you can get these little bursts where you see somebody go from not being able to do something to being able to do something. And because it's just such a fundamental part of life, being able to communicate, people find a lot of joy in that, and it's a real joy to work in the area.
Hello and welcome back to the Uni Melbourne Student Life Podcast, exploring the misconceptions, realities and developments in careers for our students in the Faculty of Medicine, Dentistry and Health Science. My name's Dan Revez. I'm a third year biomedicine student, and today I'm joined by my co-host Andy Sito and a fantastic guest who I'll let Andy introduce.
So Gemma is lead of clinical programs in the Department of Audiology and Speech Pathology. She is also a senior lecturer in the Masters of Speech Pathology course and is responsible for curriculum development and accreditation. She has over 15 years of clinical and research experience focusing on evidence-based practice in speech pathology. Her current research and teaching interests include collaborative, interdisciplinary practice, evidence-based practice, and clinical learning.
So for third-year science and biomedical students like Andy and I, with relatively little clinical experience and perhaps a view to finding out a little bit more about the different areas in clinical practice in the future, I think for most people in our position, or certainly for me, the most idea we might have about speech pathologists might be from movies like The King's Speech, in which Colin Firth plays the future king, George VI. And to cope with the stammer, he sees Lionel Logue, who's the Australian speech and language therapist. So just to start out, is a speech therapist the same thing as a speech pathologist? And could you explain a little bit about what your job involves?
Sure. Well, speech therapy is kind of the more common name, but speech pathology is what it's called in Australia. In England now, it's actually called speech and language therapy, and in America, speech language pathology. So it's got different names all around the world, but similar ideas. A speech pathologist is someone who works with people who have communication problems, and that can include stuttering, as in the King's Speech, but also problems with children when they're learning language. Some children find it more difficult than others. Children might have speech sound problems where they're saying, pronouncing words in a different way, which makes it quite hard to understand them. So they can get help from the speech pathologist. And also adults who might have either sort of a broader disability or if they have an acquired disability. So if they've had a stroke or a car accident or something impacting on their speech and language, we can work with them too. And the other area that we work in that isn't really covered by the name is swallowing. So we work with people who have difficulties swallowing, and that can come after, again, a brain injury. Most of the time. So working with people who have had a stroke would be the most common one, where people might have difficulties swallowing food or fluid in a safe way. So we work with them as well.
So would you primarily find speech pathologists in a hospital kind of setting, or in this case we're talking to you as a member of the staff at the university here?
Actually, speech pathologists work in a huge range of settings. We work in hospitals, yes. In both acute care and also in rehabilitation. We also work in nursing homes. We work in the community, so in community health, and also in schools. And more recently, there's been a role for speech pathologists working in the criminal justice system, so working with people, particularly in youth justice, so people who might have language problems and have ended up in the justice system. We have a role working with them as well. So it's actually a very diverse career. People come into it wanting to work with adults. They come into it wanting to work with children. They might only have an idea that they want to work in schools. We get a lot of people who have a background in education coming into speech pathology, but also people who have a background in sort of biomedicine sciences wanting to come into speech pathology as well.
Is that the path that you took? You came in with the idea of what you wanted to do, and you knew that was something you always wanted to do in this area and work in this area?
It's really interesting. I think it's interesting. I hadn't heard of speech pathology until I was in about year 9 at school. Never, ever heard of it before. And then I think in biology we saw a video of somebody who had had a stroke, and very briefly they showed a speech pathologist working with them. And I ended up doing that for my year 10, what's that called, where you go out, work experience. So I did work experience in a hospital, And so I kind of came to it with that idea. But having said that, I always wanted to work with kids. So when I did my practical experiences, so we do placements throughout our courses, and I got to work in hospitals, but also in schools and a few other settings, and decided that I wanted to work with kids primarily because I like working with kids more than working with adults. But we find that people sort of consolidate where they want to go throughout the course as well. Sometimes they come in with a really strong idea, and sometimes with a background in having known speech pathology through different ways. Perhaps they had a parent or a grandparent who had a speech pathologist involved. Some people come in who had speech pathology themselves when they were little. Or they might have worked, as I said, in education and have seen a speech pathologist at work there and want to work in that way themselves. But others come in with no firm idea and kind of get an idea throughout the course as to what suits them best.
It seems like you had a clear idea of wanting to go along this path from quite a young age, I guess, from year 9, year 10. Do you have any particular advice, especially for students who doesn't know what they want to do or have not yet like found their passion?
I think that it comes down to, for, I guess, thinking about this as a career is for most people, I think it's a desire to help people, and it's one of the helping sciences, I guess, in that sense. So thinking about whether you want to be people-facing, it's a very people-facing career. Whether you're working with children, whether you're working with adults, you're going to be working directly with people, and that can suit some people and not others, and that's perfectly fine. The other thing is that it combines kind of the sciences, in the sense that there's a lot of anatomy and biology involved, but also linguistics and an understanding of language and how language develops. So having either one of those interests is really where we find most people come from into this career. It kind of combines those two loves in people, I guess.
So just touching on some of those motivations you talked about seeing the stroke victim in the video in year 10, and then talking a little bit about the clinical practice and seeing the improvements in people and in patients. Is that one of the primary things that motivates you in this role?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the great things about speech pathology is that you really do get to see that improvement in people over time. And it's such a fundamental thing for people being able to communicate. Someone who's had a stroke, for example, has gone from, you know, living a normal life to having this thing happen. And then one of the areas that is impaired afterwards quite often is their communication. So imagine going from living your life normally to not being able to communicate, and how frustrating that is. So being able to work with people really impacts in such a big way on their lives when they can communicate again. And children as well, we see even when they're developing their language, quite an early age, they'll start to experience frustration if they can't communicate as they want to, or people can't understand them. So being able to help them to actually say what they want to say or get what they want to get through communication is really fundamental and fabulous thing to be able to do. I remember one child I worked with who had a speech disorder, so he was really difficult to understand. And he, one of the things he wanted to be able to say was his name, so nobody could really guess what his name was. And his mum asked me to work on the J sound with him. And in one session, he went from not being able to say it to, he was obviously quite ready, but he went from being not able to say it to being able to say it. And the joy on his face was just astounding, to be able to introduce himself to kids at kinder and be much closer to his real name was fabulous.
In terms of the tools that you use and things like that, you talk a little bit about spending that session working on pronouncing particular types of syllables and words to express certain things. Perhaps like what just came to my mind was certain things like using different types of communication. Like sometimes people would see someone like Stephen Hawking using like a computer and methods like that in order to communicate in a different way. Is that something that you do as well?
Yeah.
And also on that point of the sessions, is it how you'd imagine that kind of two people sitting in a room as if they're like a therapist appointment, and then you go through exercises, or could you give us a bit of insight into what that involves?
Absolutely. It can be anything. So at the simplest, it it would be exactly what you said, myself or the speech pathologist working with a child or an adult in a session. So doing some tabletop activities, we're sitting, you know, at a desk with each other, and I might have some words for them to practice or some sounds, and then help guide them through how to pronounce those sounds. And then we work from there, from the sound level into a word level, and then try to get them to be able to say it in general speech. It can also be very different to that. So working with people in a group. So for people who have, for example, aphasia, which is a communication disorder you can get after stroke, where you find it hard to find the right words, we might have people working together in a group where they're all practicing together to get that conversation going. And it can also be working in natural settings, so with somebody at home, especially children, but also with people at kinder or at school, working with teachers in the classroom, so giving them ideas or activities to work with the children that are having problems learning in their classrooms. And you asked about communication aids, I guess, or devices. We do work in that area. So there's a whole team of people, for example, at Scope, who works in the area of providing high-tech communication and low-tech communication aids. So that can be anything from what you described, the Stephen Hawking voice output device. It can be an iPad where they might touch certain buttons, or not buttons, touch on the iPad to have it say something for them. For people who have a physical disability as well, it can be something where they might press a button, just like activate a switch with their hand, and it says something recorded. And it can also be just something simple like a board or a piece of paper that has yes or no on it, so that if they can't in any way express themselves verbally, they might just be able to look at the yes or no when you give them a question. So it really depends on what level of communication the person has, but we can work with them with any different communication device or aid.
I was just going to say that's a lovely thing. I think it's fortunate that kind of technology has come so far in relatively like a small span of time. And maybe 100 years ago, that kind of communication with technology and feeling very much locked in would be a much bigger problem than it is today. And it sounds like a real gift to be in that kind of role, that you can experience those benefits and experience those clinical benefits together with patients as well, and see those improvements. Must be a fantastic feeling.
Absolutely. And like I said, you can see somebody, I mean, you know, quite often it is longer than that, but you can get these little bursts where you see somebody go from not being able to do something to being able to do something. And because it's just such a fundamental part of life, being able to communicate, people find a lot of joy in that. And it's a real joy to work in the area.
Now, I was just thinking, because in the clinical setting, you often have to see patients regularly and work together with them. Do you think that there are some instances where it can be a bit distressful when you don't see particular improvements or whatsoever?
Absolutely. One of the things we cover in our course is a little bit of counselling of patients, but also, I guess, helping students to learn to look after themselves in that space a bit, because you do have times that are distressing. It can be difficult, I think, particularly when people might learn of a diagnosis, or when they've just learned of it or had something happen like a stroke. So to see people in that situation can be distressing as well. Yeah, but it's something we certainly try to equip people for in the course, so that they can provide support to families or to people who are going through that, and also look after themselves as well, so that they're able to keep helping.
I think it's, in terms of clinical practice, one has to be trained to be equipped to deal with their own personal emotions. And just from the perspective of this program, which is peer mentoring, like, would you have any or did you have any mentors along the way that sort of guided you in the direction that you took? Maybe someone a bit more personal?
Sure. Well, I ended up in teaching through working in clinical practice and then getting into research. I did my PhD, and I've had a lot of people who guided me along the way. One of my I guess, mentors as well as friends is Professor Angela Morgan, who works at the Murdoch Children's Research Institute and does a lot of work with children who have a disorder called childhood apraxia of speech. And the reason she, I guess, is somebody I look up to and get advice from is that she has really taken hold of her career and moved it forward so that she is looking, I guess, for answers in a particular space to try and really guide what we do in practice. And that's something that I really value, is that having the answers, I guess, because it can be hard working in any clinical area. There's always much more out there that we don't know, like what's the best way to support somebody who has a particular disorder. And I really admire and, you know, as it said in my little bio at the beginning, evidence-based practice is one of the areas that I'm really interested in. So understanding how it is that we make a decision about what the best way to work is, to work with particular people and particular disorders. And, Ange has been really helpful in that way. And she was somebody who I worked with but who also works for the university, and I've been able to just really debrief with her. And I think that's really valuable, is to have that guide or to have that person who you're able to talk through different options, think about where you want to head with your career, finding that person. And in my case, it was a friend as well, but somebody in my particular field who I could talk to and who had, I guess, a bigger picture than I did about where I might want to head.
So we talked a little bit about developments in terms of technology and in the field, and then also a little bit now about optimization of clinical practice and updating protocols for the best kind of clinical practice and treatment. How do you think the field is going to develop further into the future?
Well, I think the major thing at the moment is the development of telehealth. It's an area that has always been, I guess, going on in the background, but something that people haven't really taken up in a major way in a lot of professions. But because of COVID, and I hate to say it because it's probably, you know, everything's because of COVID, but it's certainly forced us to look at telehealth as a viable option for more people than we have in the past, because there was no other option. So I would see that as being something that we are going to rapidly have to catch up with, find the best ways to provide telehealth. And there are a lot of barriers to that, as you can imagine. If we're used to playing with children and doing games and activities with them to keep them engaged with practicing their sounds, how do we do that over a Zoom call or a whatever call technology we're using? Because it's just like what we're doing here in terms of, you know, providing something, but they're just seeing my face on a screen instead of me being in the room, being able to say, come on, let's practice that sound, you know. So we need to look at ways of doing that. And then there's also a need for advancement alongside that. For us, it's really important that we can hear clearly what people are saying, to hear their speech sounds and also hear their voice. A voice is another area that we work in. So if we're trying to assess people, listen to how their voice is going and so forth, we need to be able to hear them clearly over the internet if we're going to do it via telehealth. So that's probably the major area that I see that's just taken off over the past 3 months, really, and that we'll have to keep up with in the future. But as you mentioned before, there's so many advances in technology for people who have very limited communication. Just the event of the iPad coming in and that being something that a lot of people have available to them means that it went from that sort of speech output device needing to be a specialised thing that you know, can only buy for people who have communication disorders, to something that a lot of people have in their homes and can be used as a device in the same way and is portable and very functional and so forth as well. So that sort of thing has really opened up the world for a lot of people who wouldn't have been able to access the right technology before to be able to use it in that way.
Thank you for that insight. I guess just something to sum up this session is that for anyone who is listening and interested in some of the topics you've mentioned today, do you have any suggestions for them to get involved?
I would recommend that they should look at Speech Pathology Australia's website. It has a lot of great information about being a speech pathologist and the areas that we cover, a lot of information for the public. So a useful place to start if you want to understand more about this as a career. They're welcome to get in contact with us at the university to find out more as well, to find out more about the course and what we cover and what sorts of things they can expect. If they're interested in pursuing it down the track. I'd say it's a fabulous course and, you know, not meaning to spruik it or anything like that, but it is actually a really good course and a fabulous group of people who we get through each year. I love teaching on this course. I really enjoy working with all the students and seeing them get through from the beginning to the end, where they might start out with very little idea about what they want to do or what even what speech pathology is. That's fine. We get some people come in who really just thought it sounded great. And by the end, they're really focused and they know what they want from their career and they're stepping out into working in this area really excitedly. And I love seeing that. So they're welcome to get in touch, but Speech Pathology Australia has some great resources as well.
Well, it's been absolutely lovely to talk to you this morning and to gain some more insight from you. Obviously, as someone who's so passionate and engaged in this area, it's really lovely. And for Andy and I, who didn't know too much about this area before this morning, I'm sure we've definitely learned a lot. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.